Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Insightful, fun conversations with some of the best LGBTQ writers from around the world. The Illusions Podcast.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Now, today I have a writer with me. She's got a new book out for Rattling Good Yarns Press. So it's available now. The book is called Desert Haven, and our guest is the author of that, Penelope Starr. So thank you for being here, Penelope.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Penelope, you haven't been on the show before. So for people that don't know you, where did it all start for you? As in, like, where did you decide to get into the writing world and why?
Oh, you know, I came to it in a roundabout way. I've always been a creative person, and I was a visual artist and a weaver for many, many years. And then in 2004, I started a storytelling event in Tucson, where people tell personal stories on a stage. And a couple of years into it, I decided, well, this is something that everybody needs to know about. So I wrote a book about it. And it's called The Radical Act of Community Storytelling. And it took me 6 years to write. And after that, I thought, you know, this nonfiction stuff is a lot of facts, and I have to keep telling the truth. So I think I want to write fiction now. And little did I know that truth is the kind of the essence of fiction.
Well, yeah.
But I don't mean to make it sound like all of a sudden I started to write. I've been writing all along. I have diaries that go back to 1976. I've been doing writing for myself for years and years and years. And then when I decided to write that first book, I took classes at the community college. I read books. I did everything I could to educate myself to learn how to be a writer and what the craft of writing was about.
You know, when you wrote that first book, I can see, so you wanted people to be aware of your storytelling in Tucson and that. So you kind of were aiming it at that. So I can kind of get that. But when you decided to, what made you go into writing a book that's fiction? Like what? Because fiction, like you're saying, there is a lot of truth. There's truth in the way people behave and what goes on in a story, hopefully, anyway. And then you kind of can craft it your way. But what would make you want to publish it and let people see it?
Well, I think the same thing motivated me for both of these projects was my passion for the subject matter. The first one, of course, was it wasn't just for Tucson. I wanted to spread the word. I felt like an evangelist for storytelling. I wanted everyone to have a community storytelling event in their particular communities. And what happened with Desert Haven was that I was working with some other women to, we decided we wanted to do a film about a women's land that was outside of Tucson. And we did tons of interviews. We did lots of shooting out on the land. We did all kinds of things. But actually what happened was we realized we don't know how to make a movie. We took a few classes, but we really didn't know how to take the next steps to do anything with this material. Meanwhile, I had been very interested in the whole concept of women's land, having, you know, in the 60s considered moving to different land. You know how it was the 60s, what can I say?
Right. Well, so what is the premise of the book? So when someone picks up this book and they take it home to read it, what are they going to get?
Well, it's a collection of linked short stories that follows a group of free-spirited women from the 70s counterculture who moved to the Sonoran Desert to create an intentional community, and it evolves over four decades. So they're interwoven stories, and I'm looking at the intersections of the Back to the Land movement, the second wave of feminism, lesbian separatism, and I'm thinking about, okay, this is rooted in history, but where does it go from there? What's going to happen next? So in order to tell this story, I felt that fictionalizing it was the best way to go. It was rooted in inspired by this one particular land, but this is fiction. The 15 characters are all from my imagination. What I wanted to do was illustrate different aspects of the experience of living on women's land from different points of view. That's why I chose to have separate short stories. But there is an arc that runs through the entire book, and that's kind of the what holds it together, is they all have a connection to this fictitious land called Desert Haven.
So now, with each story, it's told from the point of view of the person, I guess, telling that each short story. Now, these characters, how do you get into the characters that you're writing? Like you say, it's probably inspired from people you've met or seen on the way, but how do you develop them, and what kind of relationship do you have with each of these characters telling each short story?
Well, they come to me. I guess I think of the character first, or the character comes to me first, before I know what they're going to be doing in the story. They're different ages. They're from different time periods. They dictate to me. I know other writers say this, and some people think this is crazy, but I feel like a scribe, basically, that they're telling me their stories, and I'm writing it down and trying to organize it into material that reads like a book.
Right. So how do you consider them? Are they kind of like friends of yours then, or is it like family members? Well, I say that to a lot of writers. Like kind of, what's the relationship then? Like, is it kind of like you know them, you feel them, and all this stuff? Like, kind of, and when they say or dictate to you, if there's something you don't want to do, is there like a fight, or or what happens there?
Well, yeah, I can answer that. I went on a writing retreat and I have a trailer, and it was down in a lake, and I went for a week by myself in order to get to a certain stage in the writing. And a friend asked me, "Aren't you going to be lonely down there all by yourself?" And I said, "Absolutely not. I have 15 women in this trailer with me, and all talking." And what happened on that retreat, actually, was one of the stories that was actually the first story just wasn't working with the rest of the book. It was the first story I'd written. I was so attached to it. I felt like this was the correct way to start this whole thing. But I'd had a lot of feedback saying, "Hey, this just doesn't work." And the name of the woman in the story was Helen. So Helen and I had a heart-to-heart talk. We went on a little hike together, and I said, "Helen, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go." And she was very gracious about it, and she actually made a suggestion on how I could start the book in a better place. So we came to an agreement that she was going to stay intact. I wasn't going to cannibalize her, but I could use her at another time in another way. So, yeah, I don't know. It's not ghosts. It's voices in my head.
But you didn't push Helen off the cliff when you went hiking.
No, I didn't. Because she was so gracious about it. Everything about that conversation completely surprised me. I didn't realize that I was going to have to break up with her. I didn't realize that I would come back with a whole new approach to the book. It was just a little 2-mile walk through a park.
What is it you hope people take away from the book? What do you want them to get out of it?
Well, I think part of it is I'm really interested in people knowing about this part of women's history, and that this kind of underground movement was and is still an important part of a subsection of lesbian culture. I think a lot of lesbians don't even know about it. So, I kind of equate it to the Back to the Land movement in the 70s. Well, like the farm, which still exists. Some of these women's lands do still exist, but there have been so many changes over the years that's part of what I'm talking about in the book is the changes and the adaptations that people had to make as the years go on. The different challenges and different ways of looking at what is women's land. How do we live together? How do we live together apart? You know, there's all different ways of examining it.
How did you get into the details or the research into this sort of a group that's happened over a period of years? Like, was it an easy thing to do? Did you meet people? Like, where? How did you go about doing this?
Well, we established a bunch of relationships with people who had lived there, and so I did a lot of these interviews. And one person led me to another, but none of the people are depicted as who they are. I just kind of picked and chose different aspects of their stories to illustrate. So no, it wasn't hard. I used to run a senior program at the Southern Arizona Wingspan, which was the LGBTQ community center, and I knew a lot of people, and a lot of people know me and trusted me. And I feel very lucky that I've had access to listen to these stories. Like I said, I started a storytelling event. I am a story listener. I'm somebody who wants to facilitate stories and have other people's stories out in the world. So this is not about me. This is not like, I'm not interested in writing memoir, even though, of course, there's lots of parts of my life that are in this.
Well, when you were talking to some of these people, were there things that you learned that you were surprised about that had happened over the years?
Well, not really, because I've always been kind of on the fringe of all of this. I mean, I've always known people who lived in I've lived in a commune myself. I've always been part of, I guess you'd say, part of the counterculture. I don't know if that's even a word they use anymore.
Right. So what do you think the public doesn't know in general? What do you think that what's some of the biggest thing that the public gets wrong about groups like this?
Good question. I think what seems like the most important thing to me is the community and the chosen family and the connections. And that's one of the things I did in the book was I have threads of each of different women run, you know, through each other's stories. So I'm really interested in the connections and how women form communities that are supportive of them and how important that is and how that's something that we need.
You know, when you have such a tight relationship with, let's say, your characters and hearing them and dictating and all the stuff the way you described it, and you kind of go through and you write these short stories, I'd imagine in a way it's like living in them. You know, it's like you're a part of it. So at the end of the book, and all of the work. How do you think this whole process has changed you?
Well, I want to write a sequel. So I'm not done yet.
You're not done. So obviously it's really a big part of your life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Even though, you know, it's interesting, after I finished the book, I couldn't write for a while. And then, of course, there's the editing and all the stuff that you have to do to get the book out. So that's very time-consuming. But I just couldn't write. I needed to have some distance from it. I couldn't start the next book right away. I had to kind of let everything rest. But just because I'm not writing doesn't mean I'm not writing in my head. I'm not getting it ready. I'm not taking notes. I'm not, what if this happens to her? What if, you know, that kind of thing, yeah, especially in the shower.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You know, you get these brilliant ideas. So it's there, even though not a lot of it has made its way to the paper yet. But
right, it's kind of a processing period and that stuff like that. Well, you know, you're not like driving down the street and voices are talking to you while you're driving. Is that going?
No, I'm not psychotic.
No. Well, I just thought in case, you know.
Just in case, yeah.
In case. I mean, we got a lot of those kind of around nowadays. And I guess, right. Make sure you're not driving and talking to yourself. Well, you know, when we talk about this all kind of derived from your certain kind of your short storytelling and stuff like that. What is that about? So do you allow anybody to come to a storytelling event and just tell any story they want?
No, it's a curated event. So each month there's a theme and people submit stories for the theme, or the curator, the person who's the organizer of it, goes out and finds people that will answer to that theme. And the stories are 10 minutes. There's a rehearsal before the show, so it's not spontaneous, but at the same time, it's not read. There's no notes. The story is told. It's not read. So there's an audience that comes. It's been going on for 20 years, since 2004. And once a month, on the first Thursday of the month, and people pay to get in, and we have very loyal followers. And a lot of times people who come 2, 3, 4 times, they end up saying, well, maybe I could do this. And they end up on the stage too.
Wow. That's quite a hard thing to do too, to get up on the stage and just start talking to a crowd and tell a story, for some people anyway.
It is actually one of the biggest fears that my friend, who's the hypnotherapist, said she deals with when people come with their phobias, is the fear of speaking in public. So, no, it's a very interesting effect that it has on people, especially the first-time storytellers. Our tagline is creating community one story at a time. And a big mission of Odyssey Storytelling is to allow everyone to hear everyone's voices, and therapeutic, but it's not therapy, if you know what I mean. People get a lot of self-esteem. They feel like they've really accomplished something when they get up and tell a story. And the audience is so appreciative. It's a very loving, safe place to do this, to take those kind of risks. And then there are the people who love to be on stage. You have to, you know, put some kind of restraint on them so that they...
Yeah, drag them down.
Exactly. You know, you never know what you're going to get. And that's part of the fun of an event like this, because you could learn a lot. We try to have a diverse storyteller so that people get to experience somebody else's life that's very different from their own. And hopefully what we're doing is to our little bit to dispel some prejudice and create community.
Well, it sounds like a good thing. Where do people find out about that? Like, do you have a website for this, and maybe your books and other things, or do you have a social media accounts? Like, where do people go to find out about you and this sort of event?
Well, my name, PenelopeStarr.com, is my website, and I am on Facebook. And Odyssey Storytelling is the name of the storytelling event. So it's odysseystorytelling.com, and they're also on Facebook. And it's a challenge sometimes to spell Odyssey. So if somebody just Googles storytelling in Tucson, it'll come right up.
Well, we'll make sure we put it up on our website too, so people can find it easily. Did you have a favorite story in this book, short story? Is there one that sticks with you the most?
Yeah, there's one that I think I'm thinking the most about is the last one, because that's what inspired me to write the next book. Because I end that book with a conversation between an older woman who's lived through the women's land movement for 40 years and speaking with a younger woman who's 19. And I figure that I want to know what happens with a 19-year-old. So that story is very much in my mind now. I love the idea of intergenerational sharing and how we learn from each other. I think that's really important. I guess it kind of goes along with my same feeling about the storytelling, is that the more exposure that we have to people that are different than we are, the better we are, the more we grow, the more we learn.
Right. Well, and the world has changed, you know, social media and everything. People are, it's a different world, because it's taken such a hold on people, don't you think?
It is. Yes, it is a completely different world. And that's going to be one of the challenges in the next book, is to try to do, I have to do my research so I know what young people are going through. And that's the fun part of writing, too. I learn a lot.
Yeah, I think that's the best part of it. That's sort of why I say, you know, ask about changing, because usually, you know, you go through things and you learn and get set. What's your inspiration on writing? Like, do you like other writers, or do you like certain things? Do certain things get you going?
You know, I've been trying to read more novels because I'm writing a novel, and I think it's good to see what other people do and steal from other people and learn about what you shouldn't do and all that sort of thing. But right this moment, I'm reading this wonderful book by Rose Norman called The Pagoda, A Lesbian Community by the Sea. And it was published by Sinister Wisdom. And it's about this real place in Florida that was a kind of a women's gathering place. And it's great. So it kind of feeds what I'm doing also.
What's your pattern of writing? Can you just sit down and do it anytime you feel like it? Or do you have to be in a certain frame of mind or certain space? Do you have any sort of patterns?
I'm notorious for not having any kind of routine other than when I wake up in the morning and get a cup of tea and I sit down with my computer and write in my journal for however long I'm inspired to. And a lot of times, whatever I'm writing in my journal will inspire me to further writing. So, no, I don't have a set time. I don't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and write for 4 hours or whatever. I write whenever it strikes me. You know, I have complete control of my time. I'm retired, so I can write all night if I want to.
Well, that's a good thing in a way, you know. And the strange stuff going on in the world and in the U.S. doesn't sort of affect you ever.
Yeah.
Well, you know, some people can turn it off. Like, I know I do. I just have to turn off the whole world. You know what I mean? And I'm writing and doing stuff, and I just have old stuff on the TV running. I don't watch any of the news and stuff like that, so that it doesn't. Because I find it, you can get too caught up in it. You know what I mean? And it changes the mood and stuff. So. But it doesn't affect you, or I guess maybe it might inspire you to write more.
Well, no, I hear what you're saying. I'm very selective about what kind of news I listen to or read. I don't listen to any of the horrible negative stuff. So I do filter what I allow coming into my brain. I'm a pretty positive person, and I want to keep it that way.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it doesn't leave you with a lot of news sources.
That's true. I have a couple. I can tell you which ones. Well, not. But.
No. Well, I think you're right. I think the truth of the whole matter is just the social media being so influential has separated a lot of people. Like, they get their connections online, and it's easy to be negative and complaining, and that seems to be the attraction, which is really unusual, because for the most part, if you actually meet people that are different, you can learn to be friendly, or you can learn about them and you guys can connect. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not as bad in person as it is online. So it's just separating that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's statistics about anyone who either has a family member or a close friend that's LGBTQ is much more likely to be more liberal in their thinking about any of that stuff. So, yeah, I think it's very important to meet people that are different than you. I think it's very important to hear opinions that are different than your, if they're civil. I mean, that's the part that I can't do on the news or the social media. I don't want to hear, you know, just ridiculous lies and rage. That to me is not information.
Right. And it's easy to be angry and then stuff like that. But, you know, the people in the country that are different are not enemies. They're not your enemy. It's just, you just got to be understanding of everyone, you know. That's how I look at it. People need to be more positive, and it doesn't mean you have to live with the person.
I agree 100%. because someone is different than me doesn't mean that they're evil. But again, I do think it has to do with how the message is delivered.
Well, hopefully it all gets better and everything. So now you what's next? You've been working on the new book already.
Yes, I am. And I'm excited about it. You know, this book took me 6 years, I think. My first book took me 6 years. I'm 78. I got to hurry up on this next book.
Oh, yeah. You got to get on it.
Exactly. I can't take my time.
Yeah. No, there's no dilly-dallying here. No, actually, the thing is, I think for myself, because I've got 30 books published now.
Whoa.
I think it will get faster and better because there's a lot of things that you just get used to doing. Like there's certain things you'll be able to handle and write without the same need for as much editing and stuff. Like it all sort of gets better each time you do something. So it'll get faster.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Cause you don't realize it, but everything you've gone through now, when you sit down and you start doing the next book, it will be better just on the detail because you know more. And without thinking about it, you just will get better. So, for me, I noticed the difference over the years with the books and how much easier it is to put them together. Not necessarily come up with the ideas, but to actually put them together. So it will get faster. Don't worry about it.
Well, and you're right about that because I keep putting myself in a position where I'm at the beginning of the learning curve. You know, I figured out how to write nonfiction, then I switched to fiction, you know. So I understand what you're saying is that, you know, I have some skills now and I can use this.
Yeah. I mean, it's all good. It'll just keep moving. And, you know, 78, well, you don't look a day over 40. So
filters.
Well, there you go. Well, and it's the new 50, isn't it? That's what they say. Yeah. So, no, you just keep on going till you can't. So, but it sounds good.
But it's all fun. I'm having such a good time.
Well, that's it. That's part of the journey. I think it's great. I think it's good when you're really involved and there's a lot of fun to it. That means you're doing the right thing, right? It's just keep on going. And before you know it, you'll have 10 books out.
Right. Yes. I'll call you when I get my 10th one.
Well, that's great. Well, we appreciate you coming by the show. And of course, the book's called Desert Haven. It's out now. So, get out there and get it. We'll have all your information up on our website. And we appreciate you being here. Penelope Starr.
Well, thank you so much, Alan. It's been a privilege and a pleasure.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.